I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to focus on the upcoming mayoral election. Next Tuesday, Indianapolis will elect a new mayor. Today, we will talk with the Republican candidate for mayor, Chuck Brewer. On Thursday, we will talk with his Democratic opponent, Joe Hogsett. We'll talk today about Brewer's agenda for the city should he be elected. Please join this important conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are beginning a series of conversations, I think, about what it means to be mayor of Indianapolis. Today we are going to be talking with the Republican candidate for mayor, Chuck Brewer. On Thursday, we will be talking with the Democratic candidate, Joe Hogsett. And then on Tuesday, Election Day, we have a real treat, not that you are not a real treat to have here in the studio, but we are going to have a conversation with the four living former mayors, Richard Lugar, William Hudnut, Stephen Goldsmith, and Bart Peterson, about what it means to step into that job. So we're going to be all mayor all the time here for the next few days. If you would like to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Mr. Brewer, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you. It's good to be here.
And it is good to have you here. We appreciate the fact that you are sitting down with us this close to the election and sharing your thoughts. And I probably should say you were doing it with, I don't want to say under some protest, because that doesn't convey, you had a concern about the way this invitation was presented. It was to both candidates originally, and I will say that. And we thought we had a commitment for both candidates to appear here side by side. We do appreciate you honoring your commitment to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Well, this was originally scheduled to be a debate. If you remember, you had asked us both to agree to that. And we were at the CHIP forum for homeless issues, and you know, we both agreed to that. You know, I think this goes to the larger issue. I mean, I had originally asked for 9 debates around, you know, each of the different townships, and there's just an aversion from, you know, my opponent's campaign to do debates. And this is unfortunately part of it. You know, we generally get along. I think it's important to have conversations in front of voters with both candidates side by side, because really when you get down to it, it's the comparison and the contrast between two different candidates that is really essential for voters to make an informed decision. And you really can't find a better format for that than on NPR.
Well, and to be fair, at least when I made the invitation, it was not so much for a debate, because I think a lot of those formats these days are pretty stilted anyway. But really to have a thoughtful forum in which the two of you side by side could lay out your plans for the city without, you know, a lot of gotcha moments. I'm going to try to achieve that.
Well, I'm here.
Sequentially,
do what you like.
Rather than doing it side by side. And I think I'm hoping that we can satisfy the interest of the listeners in doing it this way. So I'll start first by asking, you know, when we were about ready to go on the air, I asked you pretty much what you'd learned from the experience. You've now been running for mayor for the better part of a year. What had been the experiences that had touched you the most, and also what have you learned from them, from doing this?
Well, you know, it's just my background. I mean, as an entrepreneur and as a business owner and as a former business executive and as a Marine officer with two combat tours. I have a whole host of experiences under my belt that are very rich. I'm very blessed with that. But running for public office in the 13th largest U.S. city is an incredible experience. And it's incredible because of the people that you meet and the stories that you hear, the sacrifices that people make, the success stories, the trials that people go through in their daily life, and how much work we need to accomplish as a city to help people make their dreams come true, either as homeowners, as small business owners, or as people getting out of, you know, the correctional facilities, needing a fresh start in life, kids that need a better education. There's a lot that needs to be done. You know, we've made tremendous progress under Mayor Ballard. And the whole reason why I am running for mayor is because I want to continue this progress. Mm-hmm. And I feel very passionately, like a lot of listeners do, I'm sure, that, you know, at some point, there's got to be a stop to the politicians that continue to run for office and office and office. There is a mandate, not just on the national stage, but even at the local level, for us to do things differently. We're all frustrated with, you know, public safety. We're all frustrated with the lack of infrastructure improvements and education being what it is, not good enough for parents like you and me. I mean, at some point, we have to do things differently. And that's why there's so much momentum around non-politicians, but very accomplished leaders coming into the public space to say, let's take a different approach. Let's take a different leadership model. Let's come in here and make things happen and put the politics aside.
So you want to be a continue? Are there ways that a first Brewer term would be different from a third Ballard term then?
Oh, certainly. I mean, you know, he and I are neither of us were politicians when we ran for the office. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he has been focused largely on developing downtown and has been very successful with it, I might add. My focus is going to be taking all of my business experience and small business and entrepreneurial focus and shifting that economic development out into the townships through the economic corridors that we all know to be, you know, not naturally developing among themselves, to create jobs and opportunities closer to where we live.
What, you know, in your conversations with people, when they come up to you and they talk about where the city is right now, what is the concern that seems to be foremost in their minds? Is it education? Is it public safety? Is it, you know, or is it something else?
It's two things. It's two things. Public safety, feeling safe in their neighborhoods. And number two, quality education, access to quality education for their kids. If I were to break this down to be the absolute most simple, take politics out of this, we have to create the kind of city that people want to live in and not just commute to on a daily basis. Did you know that we have 200,000 people that commute from other counties like Hamilton County into Indianapolis every day just to work, and then they go back home? Their tax dollars follow them to those counties to the north of us. Mm-hmm. We don't get any of that, and yet we maintain all the infrastructure of the 13th largest city. It is very difficult to do, and that's why it's so important that in order to continue the fiscal stability of this city, in order to make it run, all the things that you expect, public safety, the infrastructure, we have to do that on a budget that is extremely tight. And the only type of individual that can do that is a business-minded individual. Mm-hmm. That's why my skill set and doing everything I've done in my life is such a good match for where the city is now and how to continue the progress.
How is that different, though, from other major cities that, you know, often have to deal with questions of urban sprawl?
Well, that's just it. I mean, every city, every large city faces this dilemma, but some of them don't make it. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about cities like Detroit and Philadelphia and Baltimore, they do not successfully come through it. Cities like Indianapolis have the shot to do that, and they do it by electing strong leaders. We had a really strong leader, Mayor Ballard, great patriot and great leader and very business-minded. That is what we need to continue. And that's why I'm getting involved in this, is because I'm so frustrated with politicians that come into office, really have no agenda, are not very specific in their plans, and come in because they just like running for office. I have no desires on, you know, future offices after this. I want to come in, fix the problems of the city, turn things around, create the kind of opportunities that our residents expect, and then go back to being a father and a business owner.
We are talking with Republican candidate for mayor of Indianapolis, Chuck Brewer. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Max has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Max, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
I'd like to say, first of all, I lived in Annapolis my whole life, and that I have been a Democrat almost my whole life. But I really, really like the messages coming out of the Brewer campaign. I really liked Greg Ballard, although he wasn't the most eloquent person. And I think that the point about all the people commuting into the city is just really, really smart and right on. I live in a developing neighborhood, Emerson Heights, that has seen a lot of positive changes recently. And anyway, I wanted to talk about police public safety. You know, one of Ballard's things that he got a lot of flack for was not bowing under the pressure to dump more money into police. And if you look at statistics, officer to citizen ratios don't necessarily decrease crime. And anyway, I guess I'd just like some comments on that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for the call, Max, and the question.
Well, Max is right. There isn't a clear positive correlation between the number of police on the streets and, you know, decreasing crime. At the end of the day, when we look at the causes of violent crime in our city, drugs are at the heart of it. Mm-hmm. You know, when these gangs come into a neighborhood, there's another gang that exists there. The rivalry literally between two groups of people that don't number over 10 or 12 can result in, you know, a score of homicides and then revenge killings and then family revenge killings. And it just continues to go out of control. That's what we saw happen this fall. You know, adding more police is a talking point that people love to throw around there. And when we think about what we're really trying to do is we're really trying to get our violent crime under control. And we want to have zero homicides in this city. And the way we do that is by effectively employing our public safety officers and using the resources that we do have more effectively and efficiently. And my public safety plan, it's on my website, chuckbrewerfromair.com, is focused on implementing technology that is available all across the country in police departments. And what they're doing is they are creating these intelligence-led policing centers that pull in all kinds of real-time data, not just from national but state-level databases. They pull in social media feeds so that they can see in a specific neighborhood what the conversations are, talking points, keywords, photographs, if there's a gunshot or a shooting. We can pipe all of that information to our officers, give them a global perspective on a neighborhood that they're headed into on the way there so that they're more informed, so they can be more effective. That is how we can be more effective in our policing models, by introducing technology. Nowadays, you know what we use for technology? We basically use a laptop in the car that sends them information that is, you know, name, address, and the reason for the call. That's it. And it is terrifying. As a Marine combat officer that's been in combat twice, that's carried a weapon in defense of this country, I have a very unique perspective on what it means to protect people, and I will ensure that our officers get all the equipment that they need and all the support that they need from the administration.
Is there another way? Because law enforcement, and I, you know, Troy Riggs and some of the other folks that we've had on the program have argued that, you know, the problem with policing is often that it comes in only after tragedy or something bad has happened. Are there ways that we could intervene earlier in the process, perhaps to stop the crime from occurring? Yeah. And at some point, I'm going to ask you this after the break. I'll give you a fair warning. Since you raised the subject of drugs, do the drug laws that we have make a lot of sense right now? But are there ways, you know, and obviously the city right now is attempting to intervene fairly aggressively in some neighborhoods, high crime neighborhoods around the neighborhood. Do you think that's going to be effective?
So ways that we can intervene early,
yeah.
I'll just give you a story because I walk the walk here. Yeah. As a small business owner, I make it a routine practice to hire ex-offenders. About 40 or 50% of all my employees in my businesses are ex-offenders. They get out of the Marion County Correctional Facilities. It's almost impossible for them to find jobs with felonies on their records. I hire these kids. They usually just made one mistake, low-grade felony. I put them to work, and I give them a shot. And these are the best employees I have, the most loyal. And they're out to prove to not only themselves but the system that they can straighten their lives out. It puts food on people's families, gives people the evidence that they've turned their lives around, not just some to themselves but to the courts. And it's something that we ought to make a concerted effort to do as a city, and that's why I've introduced it as part of my public safety plan called Second Chance Indianapolis.
We are talking with the Republican candidate for mayor of Indianapolis, Chuck Brewer. It's part of our ongoing conversation about the mayor's race in 2015. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi. Again, we're talking with Chuck Brewer. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are in the middle of, actually at the start of what is going to be a long conversation about what it means to be mayor of Indianapolis. We are talking today with a Republican candidate for mayor, Chuck Brewer. We'll talk on Thursday with the Democratic candidate for mayor, Joe Hogsett, and then we're going to talk with every living ex-mayor next Tuesday about what it means to take the job. If you'd like to join this conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, before we went to the break, we were talking about ways the public safety, you'd said, was one of the top concerns that you find, and if not the top concern, when you talk with people whom you met along the campaign trail, and you talked about ways that we can intervene by giving people second chances and all of that. I wanted to talk also because there has been, periodically, there is some talk about revisiting drug laws in the state, at the state legislature, whether, you know, since drugs seem to be the driver often in a lot of this, whether the laws we have make sense now. I'm trying to pose that question as neutrally as I can because I know it's one people on both sides have really strong feelings about.
Yeah, so here's my perspective on this. As I see some of the trends happening, not just at the national level from an incarceration standpoint, but also at a local level where our jails are literally filling to the brim, and judges are constrained by the length of sentences or who they can put in jail because they're so crowded. I mean, we can talk more later about, you know, a criminal justice center and what a tragedy is. That's not going to happen. But when we look at putting people in jail and taking them out of society for whatever reason you want to put on the table, there has to be a certain risk assessment, right? Who do we not want on the streets? We do not want people in the streets that shoot other people. And there ought to be a clear delineation, a minimum sentence. If you decide to shoot a member of our community with a gun, I'm sorry, you can't just go in for 2 or 4 years and get back out on the streets. Can't happen. And unfortunately, that's what's happening right now. The recidivism rate for violent offenders is among the highest. They go right back into the same neighborhood. They jump right back in with the same gang, and they commit the same crime over again. We have to figure out a way to do a better risk assessment. We need our judges on board. We need our prosecutors on board. We need the state legislature to relook at this. And when we talk about drug offenses and blocking people up, I mean, I'm sorry, but filling our jails with low-level drug user offenders when really these people need treatment. I mean, I wonder if there isn't a better use of, you know, jail space as we talk about most violent offenders. You know, I don't have the solutions for this, but I concede the point that there has to be an evaluation of our risk model and who we talk about putting behind bars.
And I was going to go in another direction, but since you mentioned the Criminal Justice Center, why is it a tragedy that it's not going to be built?
Oh, are you kidding me? I mean,
I'm posing the question so that we can.
Yeah, all right. I mean, the reason people like me, get involved in politics is because they see massive projects that the city's been trying to get in the works for decades. We've needed a criminal justice center for decades. And finally, the Ballard administration worked out this agreement and this plan that involved public-private partnerships where private money was coming in to the tune of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to fund this. So we're not using taxpayer money. We're basically bonding this out over a long period of time, managing our finances. So what has happened is that my opponent came out against it. And as soon as he came out against it, the support on the city council dried up. And now they're saying that they want to restart the criminal justice center after the new administration starts. And what that looks like to the average voter is they're just killing a project because they want to give contracts and bids to, you know, donors and favored, most favored bidders in the construction industry. And that just that smells really bad to the average voter. And if you're a small business guy like me and you see stuff like that happen, it makes you furious because that is the kind of lack of transparency that we have to fight. We have to fight. And that's why when we talk about having good government, good local government that gives the little guys a shot, little guys like me and every other small business owner, we have to have trust in the system that it works properly. And for, you know, the people on the city council that killed this deal, for, you know, my opponent for coming out against it, true leadership is not coming out against a deal to kill something that's been in the works for years. True leadership is finding a way to bring sides together to find agreement so that a deal like that can be done to benefit the city, to benefit the residents, to make our neighborhoods safer, and to put people away behind bars who deserve to be put away, the people who shoot and kill members of our community.
And I want to pivot this. I was going to follow before we get to the talking about the criminal justice system. Obviously, the state has put some constraints on the ability of state government has on the ability of local communities to solve their own problems to a degree.
Yeah. Home rule.
How as mayor would you operate within those constraints? I mean, at some point, we're talking about some fairly large ticket items here. And part of those constraints involve even your ability to raise your own funds.
Yeah.
Even if your people vote for it, they still run into caps. You know, how do we solve those problems without, in effect, having to work with the state?
Well, you know, the state does put in place a number of restrictions that make it difficult for a city like Indianapolis to kind of follow its, you know, its pursuits and goals that, you know, we all agree on as voters. But when I think about what the city needs to do to change the landscape, to make some of our priorities happen, and not just in public safety, but also in infrastructure and public education, we have to create the kind of city that people want to live in. I mean, we talked about the commuter thing. Max brought it up in his call. We are so short in our ability to raise tax revenue. We have to create the kind of place that people want to move to and not only move to, but stay in once they start having children. Because once they start having kids, what's the first thing that families do? They say, what are we going to do about public education for Johnny, right? And they say, the perception is public schools aren't good enough. And when they move away, their tax dollars move away. We have started to turn around a number of pockets of Indianapolis. We've created areas where it's more livable, and it's working. We need to continue the focus. By raising that quality of life, we create a city that's more livable, and then our tax base increases. And once our tax base increases, then all those financial problems, the constraints that the state puts on, they start to disappear. We can help ourselves rather than going to the state for a handout.
How do we, you know, given that we do have limited funds, where are the areas that you would invest those limited funds? Where do we get to making this, you know, where do we spend our money in order to get those people to move to Indianapolis, and how do we spend it?
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, we have to make sure our city's safe and our neighborhoods are safe. If that doesn't happen, nobody's going to want to live here. Luckily, we have a great public safety department, and our police officers are courageous and loyal, and they work hard every day. We have to give them the tools that they need to succeed, and more people is part of that. Secondly, we have to work on education. Now, you know, there's 11 different school districts in Indianapolis, 174,000 kids in our school systems, and only 50% of them, this is from the state, only 50% of them go to schools that are considered to be high quality, A or B schools. That means the rest of them go to C, D, and F schools. Mm. Completely unacceptable. So is the city going to wait for public schools to turn themselves around, or are we going to come up with innovative solution, creating innovative models, whether it's through charter schools or other choice programs, where parents have the decision to send their kids to the best schools in the county or the best schools in the neighborhood, whether it's charter or otherwise? Once we can create those kinds of options, parents feel like there's reasons to stay in Indianapolis, and that's what we want.
How do you if schools are the key, mayors for 50 years have basically, banged their heads against the wall of public education. How do you influence the course of what is, in effect, an entirely separate government entity?
Mm-hmm.
The public, as you point out, 11 separate government entities. How do you affect the course of those as mayor, if that's one of the primary challenges to revitalizing the city?
Well, look, I am interested in creating great educational opportunities for kids no matter what neighborhoods they live in or how much money their parents make. I am interested in quality schools, period. And what that means is the city has to be able to add value to the conversation. The city's got a lot of resources, a lot of services. We can turn around a neighborhood around a school. We can create the kind of successful environment where a school can really succeed if it's got the right strategic plan inside its four walls. By creating that kind of value proposition and approaching different school districts by saying, here's what the city can do to help you with your school, with your strategic plans for each school, it creates a reason why those school districts want to work with the city. Right now, they don't have to. They've got their own plans. They're executing them. Some are doing better than others. But creating more of a partnership model, working very closely with each superintendent, who, by the way, I've met all of them, talked to all of them. They're interested in having these conversations and having the city help. But that's where we need to get to. They can't and shouldn't be an island in and of themselves. And frankly, the mayor cannot sit on the sidelines. You know, as the parent of a 9-year-old, I got to tell you, I am passionate about making sure that kids everywhere have access to these kinds of programs. By the way, one of the other programs that I introduced in my economic development plan is creating computer coding academies for free after school for kids in every township so that they have access to the kind of skill sets that after they get out of high school that, they can easily make high five figures just by knowing certain coding languages, on the iPhone or Android. And by the way, the high-tech companies that are popping up all over downtown and in our townships, they are so hungry for this talent. We can really change a generation of kids by giving them the kinds of skill sets that they need while they're in school.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with the Republican candidate for mayor of Indianapolis. It's part of a series of conversations we're going to have about the mayor's race. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, on Twitter at WFYI. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can do what a listener named Mark has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you, Tom?
What's on your mind?
Well, I've noticed the degree of civility exhibited between the two candidates, and I was wondering if Mr. Brewer would continue to run that kind of campaign for the last week.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Mark. And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, I wrote a column that appeared in a couple of places around here praising the two of you for conducting yourself as adults and keeping your disagreements at a civil level.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call. I am like every other listener out there, and I get disgusted watching the mud fly in political races. I always ask myself, why can't they talk about issues? Why can't it be about different positions or different ideas around the issues that we all care about? And so, as a first-time politician and as somebody that, tries to be genuine, I just decided to just, walk the walk. And, I entered this campaign and just decided to make it about issues and having that conversation. And, That's the way it is, and I'm going to stay true to it. You know, my frustration with the lack of substance to certain policy positions is, I think, fair game. But other than that, yeah, I appreciate clean campaigns.
What is there a position or a thought you've had that has been changed by the experience of running for mayor? Because you talked about what a learning experience this has been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most of us, when we encounter new experiences, it does force us to rethink old positions at times. Is there one that has evolved for you out of this process?
Yes. Actually, there's more than one. I'll try to keep to limit it. I do a lot of ride-alongs with the IMPD, sometimes late at night. But I learn the most about what our brave men and women do at protecting us on a daily basis. Not too long ago, I was on a ride-along, and they had found somebody that had overdosed on heroin in a back alley near 25th Street on the east side. And this young man lived in the suburbs, came in to buy some heroin with his friends. He overdosed. They kicked him out of the car. A couple hours later, his parents showed up, ID'd him. I mean, these are parents just like the people that live across the street from you. Completely the average set of parents. Clean-cut young man, and watching them go through this horror of what drugs had done to their family and how it can affect any one of us and what it does to the fabric of our community. It helped me focus my public safety policy on not just adding more police, but adding more police and then carving out about a third of them to or 35 of new officers to go specifically to drug interdiction. And then I decided to create a heroin task force that focuses on getting heroin off the streets, focusing on illegally possessed guns, and really trying to target the folks that are tearing apart the fabric of our society here in Indianapolis.
Gotten an email question from a listener named Jackie. If you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Jackie says, I am part of a church congregation near 16th and Tibbs. We are outgrowing our space and considering rebuilding on our grounds versus moving. Are there any plans to revitalize this part of West 16th as it is between the new Bush Stadium apartments and the new and improving Speedway? And I guess I could ask, if there aren't, would there be under a Brewer administration?
Yes, this is a perfect example of what you'd find in my economic development plan, which is what you might expect it to be from somebody like me. It's very entrepreneurial and forward-thinking, not what a typical politician would put out there. I call for the development of certain economic corridors that radiate out of downtown. And these are the corridors very much like 16th Street that kind of come out of the city on both the east-west and a north-south trajectory. What we've seen over years and years and decades in Indianapolis is that these economic corridors that, you know, used to be great when we had trolley cars and they stopped every, you know, few hundred meters to let people on and off, have since fallen into obsolescence. The city has all the tools that it needs to revitalize these economic corridors through, the tools that we've used downtown to reactivate areas like Mass Avenue and Fountain Square. Now it's time to shift that focus out into the neighborhoods. So the answer is yes, and they should expect to see that under my administration.
And we've got a caller. I'm going to try to squeeze it in real quickly. Ann, welcome to the program.
I wanted to discuss a couple of your ideas about criminal justice. In particular, at least relying upon the Indianapolis Star, which I don't always think is a very good source, it appeared that the Criminal Justice Center, as proposed, was enormously expensive. I did not pick up on the enormous contributions that you said would come from private partnerships, although I'm not sure how I would like that kind of thing. I'd like more explanation. But and a very minor concern was the location. I'm also concerned about your proposal for mandatory minimum sentences.
Yeah, I'm going to have to cut you off. We're headed into a break, but I will get an answer for you after the break. Thank you very much for the call and the question. We are talking with a Republican candidate For Mayor of Indianapolis, Chuck Brewer, we're going to get the question answered after the break. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with the Republican candidate for mayor of Indianapolis. On Thursday, we'll be talking with his Democratic opponent. We're talking with Chuck Brewer today. And just before we went to the break, we got a question from a listener named Ann who wanted to talk about the expense of the Justice Center and what the benefits would have been and where really the partnerships, the support. We've also gotten a similar question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air who said, just as simply, why do we need the Justice Center?
Yeah. So the Justice Center is important because of how our city has grown from the many, many decades prior when, you know, before Unigov. Now we have a much bigger city and a criminal justice system that is kind of this patchwork of courts and Marion County correctional facilities, and they are all located in different areas of, you know, the downtown environment. There is so much logistical expense and personnel expense that is required incrementally over and above what it should be because we have to constantly move these inmates from the jails to the courts, back to the jails, back to the courts, back to, and it requires so much additional expense that the city for decades has been trying to find a way to create kind of a one location operation where it could find a good piece of land situated efficiently where people could get to it and have the jails located on it, the courts located on it, city county services located there so that we would be able to get our expenses under control and do this in a more efficient fashion. The city has not done it in the decades and decades, and administration after administration has kicked it down the road because of the fact that it would be so expensive. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. The total price tag is, I think it was a little bit over $1 billion, mm-hmm. all said and done, right? So the way that an innovative administration tries to approach something like this is it goes out into the marketplace and says, hey, we want to find some private dollars that can come in, work with a public entity. The public entity, the city, has a certain amount that it could spend on a criminal justice facility every year, but we need to budget it over time. And the private partners come in and say, okay, we can build this facility for you. We can run it for you. We can, given certain assumptions, make this work for you if you can pay a certain amount every year. That way, the city is able to achieve its savings, manage its expenses in a predictable fashion over time. And that's what we so desperately need is predictability to our expenses and outsourcing some of the construction of this to somebody else's dollars. And so that's what the Criminal Justice Center was trying to achieve. And we were so close. It literally got to the one-yard line, and then it was killed purely for political reasons. I mean, people say, well, you know, it was the financing. But the financing was approved and signed off by Moody's mm-hmm. and Fitch. I mean, these are national, global financial institutions that have basically looked at the finances and said these are solid.
Are there any services, government services, that shouldn't be privatized?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of them, but okay. You know where we can,
because there have been concerns, obviously, with law enforcement and prisons that
yeah.
that you know if you turn them over and you make the prisons private, there will be an impulse to fill them.
Oh, yeah.
There's a profit motive.
No. I mean, when we talk about areas where the city does not have a core expertise, we talk about things like managing its fleet. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, the city should not be in the business of managing its fleet. That's mm-hmm. why the city tried hard to find that Vision Fleet deal where it would outsource the management of fleet to some extent to a third party and achieve savings. And, you know, that's what that deal was intended to do.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Kelly, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. Kelly says, poverty is at the core of most problems in Indy. How will at Indy Chuck Brewer address poverty.
So you and I actually talked about a number of these issues when we were at the CHIP forum.
We were.
You know, that we have conversations with food banks. The lines get longer and longer every year. There's a disparity in terms of economic success and viability in residents between the lowest and the highest. Creating economic opportunity, being the city that attracts employers and attracts jobs is a big part of it. But creating the safety net that the city has right now is really kind of lacking. There are a lot of community centers out there that act as that safety net. The city subsidizes it to a very small extent. But on the campaign trail, when you go out and visit mm-hmm. these community centers and see everything that they do, you know, these are community centers that are meant to provide a safe place for people. They turn into food pantries. They turn into workforce development. They turn into child care, health clinics, and they don't have the budget to do any of it. So there's a lot that the city can do, most notably contributing to the upward mobility of a lot of the families.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Allie, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Allie says, as a social worker in the community working with a diversity of families, I have seen the cycle of poverty and homelessness affecting our community and children. You spoke about overcrowding in jails. Often we find people experiencing homelessness, being arrested and treated as criminals unnecessarily. Do you have any ideas to be proactive in addressing this issue? Right now, we have only reactive responses, and they do no good. How can we help support those experiencing homelessness instead of criminalizing them? You alluded to part of this. You do have a plan for dealing with homelessness.
Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about it. I go out on ride-alongs to visit homeless camps and engage with the members of our community that are experiencing homelessness. And it was very clear to me that at least 50% of these people that are homeless are suffering from SMIs or serious mental illnesses. And creating a program so that they can be treated in the field for their mental illness, and then getting to the point where we can invite them to certain housing options and get them back on the right track. But until they get that mental illness under control and to the point where they can start having reasonable conversations about their next steps in life and how we can make that transition for them, that's really the key. And to the caller's point about, well, you might imagine a little bit over 50% of mm-hmm. our inmates in a number of our correctional facilities also have the need for treatment for mental illnesses. And this just goes to prove the point that a lot of people are in there because, you know, they're not serious risks, but they have serious problems, mental problems that need help. And, the city can do a lot to help fix that. I think that, good conversations with experts around the most effective policies that we can put in place, being wise stewards of taxpayer dollars is really the next step.
We are starting to get a lot of phone calls and messages, so I'm going to ask callers in particular to be concise in framing their questions. Lisa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just wanted to take the opportunity to publicly thank you, Chuck, for the time and commitment and authenticity that you've brought to the mayoral campaign. It's a shame the Republican Party hasn't done their part to support their slated candidate, but I hope that as more and more people are getting to hear your message, noticing that not only are you aware of the issues facing our community, but you're very focused on the solutions and the innovation that can continue to make us a great city, and I just wanted to thank you for that, and also wanted to know, do you still have any yard signs?
Oh, man, that makes me feel really good. Thanks for saying that. The answer
is
yes.
Thanks very much for the call, Lisa.
Yeah, the answer is yes. Thank you, Lisa. You made my day. On my website, chuckbrewerformayor.com, you can go out there or you can check us out on Facebook. Just request a yard sign. We will literally bring it by your house within a day or two.
Well, she alluded to something, though, and that, in some ways, it almost is as if there are two Republican parties these days. There's the one that's out in the state, and there's the one here in Indianapolis. Is there a tension between those factions? Because, there was a lot of pressure, for example, the man you hope to succeed. There were a lot of people who were trying to urge him to challenge Mike Pence and Governor Mike Pence in the primary because of the RFRA thing and all of that, and they didn't think that there was enough focus on development issues and all of that. Is that tension real that she alluded to?
The answer is yes, it is. I'm inspired by Lisa, so I'm just going to be a little authentic here and just be really real. I am not very political. I don't sit up late at night reading things about Democrats or Republicans. I am trying to do the best thing I can for the city. The city needs the kind of leader that is genuinely interested in its progress and does not have political orientations. You know, people like my opponent who've been the chairman of the state Democratic Party, I mean, they come to, you know, an office like this with some political baggage. And it's hard to get people around the table with that kind of background. As a non-politician and as somebody that is used to dealing with business teams every day and bringing together deals and agreements where you find common ground, I have come into this opportunity seeing what needs to be done and have tried very hard to sidestep all the politics. I hear it all at the state level and the national level, but you cannot be a hardcore one party or another in Indianapolis and succeed. You know, Hoosiers are very common sense. They expect fairness and transparency, and they expect progress. And you don't get that from career politicians. And what you get is a lack of progress. And you get deals that are killed at the last minute. People like me come to the table, and we bring a refreshing, innovative approach and get things done.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Trevor, and Trevor says the idea of an after-school program for technology sounds like a good idea. Are there other programs that you might be interested in setting up or expanding? Also, how do you intend to pay for this after-school program when school districts are already regularly cutting funding for extracurricular activities?
Oh yeah, I've already talked to the superintendents, and they've all said, "Yeah, what money, right?" And so, yeah. When I think about ideas like this, I think about who benefits, right, and how can we lower the barrier of entry to programs like this. And so, I started talking to CEOs in the community of all these tech startups and companies that are so desperate to attract high tech talent into Indianapolis. They find themselves trying to recruit people from San Francisco, from the East Coast, just because they understand how to code in the iPhone language or in the Android language. It occurred to me, what if I could get some of these companies that are so desperate for this talent pipeline to sponsor an instructor for 3 hours, you know, two times a week after school, and create a for-free coding academy in each township? What would happen? I mean, it might not work, but I have a feeling that it would. And based on that success, it would get more success. Eventually, we would open it up not just to kids, but to young adults that want to change a career completely free. How great would that be to create kind of the next hotbed of talent right here in Indianapolis? You know what that would do to being the kind of city that would attract more employers and entrepreneurs? It'd be hard to beat.
We are talking with the Republican candidate for mayor, Chuck Brewer. David, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, and how are both of you? Peace and God bless to one and all.
Thanks very much. And David, we're getting a little tight on time, so I'm going to ask you to get to your question pretty quickly.
Yes. I was wondering there, Chuck, if you had some ideas in regards to helping people who have emotional issues here in the city. Way back when we had Central State and the police had that tool to deal with, right now it's been my experience that if you have any kind of emotional issues, you're pretty much on your own. Our crisis centers don't even come close.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, David.
Thank you.
Yes, David, I was thinking about that facility and its closure. I think that was closed under the Biden administration?
Maybe even before that. Yeah. I think it goes back a long way.
So what happened is all those people that were being treated in that facility basically ended up on the streets in Indianapolis. Many of them are homeless, and they're the very people that we see at these homeless camps today. When Marines like me try to understand what the state does and what their role is, very often we find ourselves breaking it down into the simplistic three things. The state educates, medicates, and incarcerates. And the medication and the infrastructure for some of our most needy folks in our communities is essential. We have to have some kind of safety net, some kind of place to be able to treat them. I will lobby the state legislature to reconsider creating programs that will work for members of our community that need it. But in the meantime, the city is going to have to find solutions, and we're going to have to be innovative. I'd like to approach some of our anchor institutions, not just Eskenazi, but some of our other larger hospital systems, to see what their ideas are, what some of the best practices around the country are. Try to get a little bit entrepreneurial on this, create a program where there's kind of a win-win situation, and we're able to affect, you know, the community and create change for people that need it and create some stability in people's lives.
Gotten a tweet from a listener, goes by the initials HM. It says, a majority of Americans want universal criminal background checks on gun sales. What would Brewer do to support this movement?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a Marine. I'm a combat veteran. I believe strongly that people should be able to own a handgun if they so desire. I own one because, you know, I have to keep up my qualifications as a Marine officer. But I get really concerned when, you know, people with, you know, very difficult mental backgrounds where they've got some challenges are, you know, able to get handguns. It creates many of the headline issues that we see pop up around the country every now and then. I think it's important to make sure that, you know, people aren't able to buy guns if they should not own one. People with, you know, criminal records, people that have had a tendency and have proven to their community that they're not responsible, you know, that does not bode well for society. But you know, in general, I mean, I think that, you know, the way that the system is set up is resulting in, you know, access for people that want home protection. I think that they're able to get it. We just have to make sure that, you know, the criminals who illegally possess guns that contribute to all the shootings, those are the people that we need to be focused on. That's why my public safety plan calls for all these different actions and policies to target those people the most.
We've got about 45 seconds left. Yeah. I know that's not much time. What's the biggest way that your administration would be different from Joe Hogsett's?
Well, it's a difference between the two candidates and, you know, our experience and backgrounds. And, you know, voters are going to have an opportunity to choose on Tuesday. You know, my opponent's been in politics for 40 years and has run for a number of different offices. I'm not a politician. I'm a small business owner and an entrepreneur. And beyond that, I'm a United States Marine. Did two combat tours in Iraq. I know something about protecting people. I also know how to balance budgets, manage expenses, and create jobs on a daily basis. I can assure you that I will keep politics out of our daily operations as a city and protect our neighborhoods and keep our schools safe. That's me.
And I think that will have to be the last word. I do hope, I'm going to wish both of you good luck because I think that it's important, and we thank you for running for office. Thank you for being here, and we hope you will come back one way or the other, win or lose, after next Tuesday.
Well, thank you very much. You can count on it.
You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.